This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning, and thank you so much for starting off your day with us here on The Morning Run. I'm Tan Chung Han. With me, Koo Soo Chuang and Joyce Goh, filling up the Hokkien quota for the year on The Morning Run, I think.
Good morning.
Tio mo tio?
Tio. Three out of three. Not bad.
Two Penangites, one from Klang. Well, let us know where you are tuning in from. You know, you can not just hear us via the radio waves on the 89.9 frequency, but also online via the BFM app. All right. Now, while you were asleep, or rather, let's get to some news overnight. Let's start with some local news. The Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir, has told us to forget Vision 2020. Now, if you guys recall, Vision 2020 was a concept that came up, you know, many decades ago. I recall being in school and, you know,
singing the songs
and being asked to draw, you know, like, what do you think Malaysia would look like in 2020? We thought flying cars would be here by now. But yeah, you know, he's now told us to forget Vision 2020. Why? This comes after the rejection of his proposed idea for a second or a new national car project.
We need another car like we need a hole in the head. You know what I mean? We've just had this huge debacle and failure with Proton. And then now he wants to have another one. I mean, I like Tun, right? I mean, he's a good guy. He works hard. He does a lot of good things. But another car, forget about it.
Right. Well, he's certainly putting us to shame, given that he is running a whole country at the age of 93. Yeah, no, yeah, go figure. You know, but I do agree with you, right? Because with the amount of investment, the capex that is required to start up a new national car project, you know, you got to consider the opportunity costs, right? So, well, that appears to be on the back burner for now. Or maybe even scrapped, and he tells us forget Vision 2020. Moving on to global news here, let's talk about U.S. President Donald Trump's recently concluded summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. So, it seemed to be somewhat non-eventful, except the headlines came out of the press conference following the summit, whereby Trump appears to be siding with Putin when it comes to the FBI's investigation into Russian meddling in the U.S. elections.
Yeah, the two men held, I think, nearly 2 hours of closed-door talks there in Helsinki on Monday. And Trump came out to say that, you know, President Putin says it's not Russia. I don't see any reason why it would be. So, yeah, I think that's one of the headlines that came out coming from that meeting. Interesting to hear that he's now siding with Russia against the FBI.
Looks like there was a bromance over there in Helsinki, yeah.
Wouldn't doubt, deny. We see that a lot in Malaysia, right? I didn't do it. Wasn't me. I don't know.
Sounds like me, but wasn't me.
Yeah. Well, so that's coming out of the press conference, although rather conveniently, there was another headline coming out that the U.S. government has charged a 29-year-old Russian woman with conspiracy to act as a Russian government agent while infiltrating political groups in the U.S. So it looks like the age of espionage, that is still very much alive and kicking.
This chick looks like Linda Hamilton in Terminator 3, man.
Is that really her, though? That's her Facebook photo.
Yeah, she looks proper, man.
Maria
like
Butina. Okay.
Take your head off with that gun.
So we're looking at, if you're interested to find to find out which picture we're talking about, it's on the BBC.com, and her name is Maria Butina, and she apparently had developed close ties with the Republican parties, and that's a party of Donald Trump, and had become an advocate for gun rights, right? And this is according to US media reports. Yeah, but I do see what you guys are talking about there. She's got this massive rifle in her hand.
Guns, you know, bigger than her.
Yeah, a huge gun. And so she's the one, apparently, although the BBC article stresses that it's not related to the probe by the FBI's Mueller.
Han, you're American.
Yeah, I'm from Klang,
you would have seen Sacha Baron Cohen's latest comedy, right?
Yeah, who is...
Speaking of gun rights, he's just like Israeli, like former Mossad soldier who masquerades and goes around talking about gun rights in America, right?
Yeah. Well, look, I'm surprised that he's still able to reinvent himself after Borat, right? After all the other shows. Yeah. So
creative incredible guy.
Well, creative, controversial, nonetheless. With the little time that we have left, speaking about controversial, there was a mob in Indonesia that has slaughtered nearly 300 crocodiles. Apparently in the name of revenge. So there was a farm in Indonesia, a legal crocodile farm, and apparently one of the crocodiles attacked a villager. And in response, this whole mob slaughtered all 300, or almost 300 crocodiles there.
They've been reading The Godfather, man.
Actually, apparently, I think the slaughter was in retaliation for a local man thought to have been killed by one of the animals from the site. That's why they went out. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. 2 weeks ago, did you see this WhatsApp video someone sent two or 3 weeks ago? This woman had been swallowed whole by a crocodile.
No.
Yeah. Absolutely amazing. This crocodile is about something like 15, 20 feet long. It's crazy. Oh.
So, did she survive?
Well,
she had
gone to the netherworld, but, you know, obviously the villagers, her relatives are obviously quite distraught.
Yes.
Yeah. There'll be one heck of a story if you get swallowed by a crocodile and you live to tell the tale.
You all didn't see it? Seriously? I saw it and you all didn't see it?
No.
All right, well,
to our WhatsApp.
Yeah. Well, with that mental image in mind, speaking about consuming meat, we'll talk about WeWork's plans not to allow its 6,000 employees to claim back its expenses when eating meat. That's coming up right here on The Morning Run on BFM 89.9. More Than a Feeling by Boston, right here on BFM 89.9. You're tuned into The Morning Run. Han, Chuang, and Joyce taking you all the way up till 10 a.m. this morning. It's 11 minutes past 6 a.m. on this Tuesday, July 17th. Now, More Than a Feeling. That's how I describe my cravings for meat. It is this carnal desire I need my meat, okay? And so you have this company, which is a shared workspace company called WeWork. Now, they are going meat-free. So they have notified their 6,000 workers that all its company events will no longer involve meat and that meal expenses incurred by staff will not be reimbursed if those meals include red meat.
Yeah, so a note went out to 6,000 workers saying that it's in a world memo around the world, and it says that new research indicates that avoiding meat is one of the biggest things an individual can do to reduce their personal environmental impact. So this is even more so than switching to a hybrid car, guys. Mm-hmm. So would you give up your meat? Okay, Han, definitely not. Mm-mm. But Sean, would you give up your meat to be environmental?
I can do without meat. But I mean, the thing is, not many people know this, but the meat methane gases emitted by cows and their offal basically, right? It produces more carbon dioxide than cars, right? This is amazing. And you know how much meat America produces, how much meat Australia produces? It's huge.
Right.
There are more cows in Australia than human beings. In fact, there's more kangaroos and sheep in Australia than human beings.
I think that's New Zealand, though. Right?
No, also.
Oh, yeah, also.
Okay. Also.
Right. Okay. Well,
it explains why they talk a bit funny sometimes.
Anyways, Chuang. Looking at this story, right, does the company, have a right to withhold such privileges, if I may use that word there, right? Is it a privilege or is it a right? In other words, how far should a company go in meeting the needs/wants/desires of their employees? Because right now the trend is to really cater to your employees in order to attract talent and retain them, right? So, where do you draw the line?
Like in imposing your will upon your people, like how, rubber glove manufacturer might say, I support political party B, and therefore, the staff kind of like suffer for it.
So. I wonder who you're talking about.
I don't know. Just saying.
Well, in this case...
It's a super assumption.
In this case, WeWork's case, I think it's because they're paying for the food.
Yeah,
not saying that you can't bring meat into the office, right, if I understand correctly.
You can eat, but just kind of expense it against the company bill.
Yeah, correct.
But again, like you pointed out, Chuang, it may be an issue or a conviction that
not everybody shares.
Right, not everybody shares.
You. I mean, you love your meat,
right? Yeah, I love my meat, man. Oh, it's terrible. That explains why I'm this size. Thank God for radio.
You walk past animals, they run.
They flee in terror. Hans coming, run away.
Well, in WeWork's case, they're saying that allowances are going to be given for medical or religious reasons.
Okay.
That's what the memo said. In that case, I guess it's fair.
Beyond, say, diet, right? Then let's try to think of other examples. So if, let's say, they don't agree to a particular kind of health care, or they don't agree to a particular dress code or something, right? I mean, there are many different ways that a company can perhaps impose their values on the employees.
Happens all the time. I mean, look at airlines. They basically tell their air stewardesses to wear skirts, and you know, usually the shorter the better, right? And in banking circles, you can't. No, I'm serious, right? I mean, that's the whole premise behind Vietjet, for example. Remember, and the founder's a woman, right? And then you've got banks, and you know, specifically investment banks, who say, you know, no. Is it no pantsuits in something like that, right?
Really?
I think it was a Goldman Sachs or something. Yeah. Of course.
Right. So, you know, I guess at the end of the day, does the employer have, you know, the final say when it comes to, you know, what kind of values, beliefs, or lifestyles actually manifested at their workplace? So do they have the final say, or should that power be given to the people?
I guess the employers will say, you know, if you don't like it, the door is there.
You can chow.
But if they do that, then they stand to lose high talent, right?
Yeah.
Can they afford to have the kind of authoritarian approach in this day and age?
I know a lot of employers who say, you know, no one's indispensable. Mm. So at the end of the day, you guys want to go, please, the door is there. And yeah, at the end of the day, you know, we're paying the salaries. If you don't like it, I don't know. Have you met anyone who say, oh no, we're going to pander to the employees? I've not met any employer like that.
Well, I mean, it depends on what industry they're in or how much talent they have waiting outside. No, so it depends. Well, let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899. Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Should employers have the final say on what what happens at a workplace, what kind of lifestyles are manifested at their workplace, or should that power belong to the people? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9, Valerie by Amy Winehouse. What a great tune from 2006. Can't believe so much time has flown. It just seems like yesterday, you know, I was rocking out to this tune. Again, there's the late Amy Winehouse gone too
27
soon.
Years old, man. Yeah, too soon.
Yeah. Well, let's speak about another young, successful woman. Kylie Jenner, age 20, is the youngest person on the Forbes list of America's richest self-made women. Again, that's a Forbes list. Now, people aren't so much mad or maybe even jealous that she is a billionaire. This is Kylie Jenner. But it appears that there's a lot more controversy surrounding the fact that she was labeled by Forbes as a self-made billionaire.
Yeah, I mean, it's come out and everyone's talking about that. I mean, the debate now is the word self-made, whether or not she's self-made. So you can see, like, even dictionary.com came out weighing in on this, and they tweeted out the definition of self-made as, in quotes, having succeeded in life unaided. So used in a sentence, Forbes says that Kylie Jenner is a self-made woman. And they tweeted that with the Forbes front page of Kylie out there. And, you know, everyone's responding whether or not, you know, is she self-made? Of course, her fans will say, you know, just haters gonna hate.
Right. Can I just say, no huge fortune was ever made without the assistance of some I mean, of either some huge crime, like, you know, Joe Lau, for example. Oh, by the way, the book was launched yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Kinokuniya.
It's out already?
It's out, yeah. Well, the
boy, I think pre-orders, or the actual book is out?
No, pre-orders.
Yeah. Pre-orders, that's right.
Because
yeah.
I've pre-ordered, and it's supposed to come out in September.
Yeah, so the evil American press, they called Joe Lau a billionaire, but he got to be a billionaire by taking money from the Malaysian people, right?
So, you know, getting help doesn't...
But I'm not saying that Kardashian or Kylie Jenner made money through cheating Malaysian people, but she made... It's really weird because I've just come to understand the story, right? So she is the second child of the first iteration of the couple who basically became famous through a sex tape, right?
No, she's the youngest. She's the youngest sibling of the Kardashian group,
and
right?
And they all became famous because Kim was initially famous
her
through a sex
sister.
Tape, right?
Yes, okay.
And then she's the child of a transsexual.
That's
a guy who used to be
Bruce Jenner.
That's Bruce Jenner.
But
I'm getting
so
a Kardashian history 101 right now. I can't believe I'm doing this.
So coming back to this is the whole self-made issue, right? Because yeah, there are people out there. There are billionaires or tycoons out there who had a leg up. Were born with a silver spoon, and then from there they made their fortunes. But there are also self-made billionaires like Lo Boon Siew and all that who've made their money on their own. So I think the contention here in the Forbes cover is because they called her self-made. And you know, she launched her beauty brand. She sells makeup, right? And she launched it. She sells it through her her social media. She has about 110 million followers on Instagram.
Look at Joyce.
We're
having this conversation, yeah, okay, right? And it's because of her social media that came because of the popularity of the family that gave her a platform to sell her makeup.
Can I just say, I'm less interested in Kylie Jenner than I am interested in the size or the potential of the American economy, right? Mm. Because only in America can you get this rich, this young, via marketing and social media. I mean,
true.
I sometimes watch people like Shaquille O'Neal and Shaq, right? Yeah. He's made a huge amount of money from his celebrity endorsements, from his advertisements, not from his sporting career. He made $300 million. He's made twice that amount from his post-sporting career business, right? That's huge.
Right, so
Amazon's Jeff Bezos is worth more than God itself now, right? He's got $140 billion. He's like Bruce Wayne. He's building rockets to go into space. He's buying newspapers. He's buying all kinds of stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you can put a net asset value to God, but okay, so now, I mean, what does self-made actually mean, right? Because if you say you take it from a sociological perspective, if let's say you're a middle-class family, you are able to speak the code and thereby convince investors, you have the background that's requisite for having a successful career, et cetera, et cetera. All that plays into Kylie Jenner. She's got that, I wouldn't say pedigree, but she's got that famous family background, mm-hmm, or the famous family name to leverage on. That's one. Mm-hmm. And then it comes at a time when, say, the American masses have demand, obviously ample demand for her product and her brand, right? If let's say Kylie Jenner was born in the 1920s, she wouldn't be Kylie Jenner, right?
Well, so, the textbook definition or the slavish definition is obviously if you get washed up on shore, having, been a refugee from, say, Puerto Rico, and then you become a billionaire through your own blood, sweat, and tears, not because your elder sister was famous initially, right? Then, mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay. Well, nevertheless, Kylie Jenner, I think, undoubtedly, is a successful brand. Joyce, what does she do again? Lipstick?
She sells makeup.
Do you use her stuff?
No.
Okay, well, so this song doesn't apply to you then. A little bit of Kylie Jenner in Everything, maybe not. A little bit of You in Everything by The Rentals. That's coming up before the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Talk of the Town by The Pretenders. You're tuned into The Morning Run. I'm Tan Chung Han, with me, Koo Soo Chuang and Joyce Goh. Speaking about Talk in the Town, Talk of the Town, thank you so much, SK Wong, for your WhatsApp responding to the news that we discussed earlier, that Tun Dr. Mate has told us to forget Vision 2020. This in response to the rejection of his idea for a new national car project. SK says, another national car? ? Choking up the road in Klang Valley and children playgrounds to give way to car. Oh no, Toon, what we need is at least BRT. BRT, I believe, being the bus rapid transit system. I think the bus that runs on that elevated
Singapore, yeah?
Well, even in Sunway.
Also here, yeah? Really?
Yeah, Sunway. There was talk about them building a BRT along the federal highway as well. But SK talks about his experiences with the BRT in China, Xiamen and Guangzhou. Well, thank you very much, SK, for your WhatsApp message there. Folks, you can always be part of this conversation. WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, another topic that's been part of the talk of the town in this Malaysia Baharu post May 9th is perhaps the role of GLCs, in this new Malaysia and what the government is trying to do. They've spoken about abolishing monopolies, right? Perhaps restructuring the GLCs. This reform agenda is very much on the lips of many people in corporate Malaysia. Now you've got this article or this opinion piece by Professor Joe Moh, who is the economics professor and assistant secretary general for economic development at the UN. He's also now part of the Council for Eminent Persons. And he writes back, talking about perhaps the market failures that may come out of privatization, it is not perhaps the miracle cure that some are led to believe.
Yeah, he's saying that, privatization gives priority to profit maximization. Typically, this is at the expense of social welfare, equity, and public interest as well. So he's saying in most instances, such priorities tend to reduce jobs, overtime work opportunities and real wages for employees besides imposing higher fees for consumers?
No, Professor Jomo is absolutely spot on. He's absolutely right in pointing this out because, I mean, Malaysia's had one experiment already with privatization. It's spawning, you know, people like Halim Saad, Tajuddin Ramli, a whole bunch of others, you know, so-called self-made, but not really self-made because they were privatized. And then you see all around the world, right, the Russian oligarchs like, you know, Roman Abramovich, and they got, you know, into billionaire territory, not because they built the business, but because they got privatized into the business because they were good friends with the leaders of the time. The problem I have with Professor Jomo's article is it does not provide a panacea for the problem. Mm. He's right in pointing it out, but he doesn't provide an answer for it. Mm. And it's a big problem because for every country with a huge SOE or GLC, like in Singapore, like in China, like in Malaysia, we don't have a solution. We know we've got to pare down stakes in government entities. It's gotten so big. I mean, GLCs alone make up 35 to 40% of the KLCI. But what do we do? Who do we do it to? Who do we do it with?
Who do we sell it to?
Are there enough individuals to sell it to, right?
Right. Well, okay, I guess the idea, the very simplified idea, is that then you give it back to the private market. I mean, at the end...
You don't give it back. You got to sell it back at market rates. But then they got to run the business.
Sure, right. So, because fundamentally, you got to ask yourself, right, you know, who is the best driver of the domestic economy? Is it the state? Or the private sector.
It's a private sector.
Well, there we go. So if that's the case, then if you look at business studies 101, you know, then you got to perhaps take into account, you know, wasteful competition or the costs perhaps being experiencing more upward pressure as opposed to say getting subsidized from the government or you know having these kind of interventions from the state, right? So, I mean, yeah, it's not a zero sum game, you know, but there have been plenty of criticisms about the nature of GLCs here in Malaysia, you know, so it's certainly worth looking at. I mean, Chuang, on your breakfast grill with MAHB yesterday, that seems to be the core of your chat with Malaysia Airports, right?
Yeah, I mean, MAHB was the subject of one of the earlier salvos in terms of the government GLC divestment program started by Tun Badawi back in the day, 2004-2005. I mean, by and large, they've done it, but they haven't really done it outside of Malaysia because it's still a very much GLIC ownership structure between PNB, EPF and Khazanah. They still own 61%. So I try to look around the world, right, at institutionalized ownerships of big corporations, even Facebook, right? The problem with those structures is that they tend to be very nationalized still. Yes, Facebook might be 81% institutionalized, but it's 95% American institutions. You know, so the, you know, the
it's a private institution.
Yeah, yeah, no, but the fund management institutions, yeah. Right? So the BlackRocks of this world, you know, the Bridgewaters of this world and so forth. You won't find a European fund with 20-30%. It's not a 40-50% European profile versus a 40-50% American profile. So it's still very much a national thing.
Mm. Chuang, speaking about looking around the world, I mean, in Professor Jomo's article, he states that in the US, UK, Canada, some of them between 1999 and 2004, when they underwent the whole privatization exercise, this included Malaysia, the Philippines, South Korea as well, it adversely affected female workers more. That's what he's saying. And he's saying that, you know, IMF and World Bank safety net or compensation proposals were either too costly for the public treasury or too administrative and burdensome for many developing countries. So there are a lot of cost. I mean, he's looking at the cost for privatization.
Yeah, I mean,
as well.
Like either way you look at it, you know, if it's going to be, say, a planned economy, there's going to be inefficiencies there. Obviously, you know, likewise, if you just fully entrust the economy to the private sector, you're going to get inefficiencies there as well. But then, perhaps towards the more extreme of the spectrum, you've got the likes of Dr. Wu Wing Tai, who actually describes GLCs as vehicles of corruption. This was reported in The Edge just a few days ago there, you know. So, yeah, plenty of debate about the nature of GLCs moving forward. We have to wait and see, you know, whether the government has the political will and, more importantly, the plan, a well-drafted plan to reform the corporate sector or the GLC sector here in Malaysia. It's 46 minutes past 6 a.m. and we'll be back with more news and analysis right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Stevie Wonder with Signed, Sealed and Delivered, released in 1970. You're not going to ask who was born by then. Well, certainly not me. I'm Tan Chung Han, with me, Khoo Soo Chuang and Joyce Goh, taking you all the way up to 10 a.m. this morning on the morning run. Now, if you spent any time online yesterday, you would have seen that meme or at least the news headlines about former youth minister, Rumba MP, Khairi Jamaluddin, YBKJ, staying put in the in Dewan Rakyat, right, with the parliament's session now kicking off. Now, this after the BN and also PAS MPs staged a walkout. Now, his act of defiance, if I may use that term, has now gotten some feedback. And one of the feedback is for him not to go overboard. That's coming from UMNO Secretary General Anwar Musa, right? So questions now but has been posed about, you know, KJ's future within the party. So I guess the point to consider this, you know, while KJ may have been lauded for his act of defiance, for staying put and not joining in the walkout, you know, where do you draw the line between, say, standing up for your personal convictions versus towing the party line? Because on the flip side, say you got the likes of Rafizi Ramli, right? He has kind of, you know, gone against the grain and has perhaps criticized some of the decisions that were made within Pakatan Harapan, and he got a tremendous amount of flack as well, right? So where do you draw the line between standing up for your personal convictions versus towing the party line?
It depends on what outcome you want, isn't it? Right? It depends on what kind of message you want to send. Because if you're willing to die by your own sword, then you go ahead and do it. Because I think at this vintage, KJ knows what he wants and he knows the outcome he wants. And I think he's weighed the consequences of his action. Because, you know, in the past, UMNO does not allow such acts of defiance, right? Mm. They act very swiftly. But it's a very different era now.
Yeah, right? Indeed.
It's a very different time.
And he isn't the only one. Kimani's MP, Dato Sri Anifa Aman, also sat in. I mean, he didn't follow the walkout. So in this case, I mean, yeah, you guys are right. But now the question here is whether Defan, KJ and Anifa may face a backlash. Because you also have the UMNO's general secretary saying that, you know, no individual is bigger than the party. You have these sound bites coming out and not sure whether or not, you know, there is. And also UMNO leaders asking, is KJ a team player? It's what's going to happen? What are the consequences for what he did? Mm. But I must say, he did score some points with some people as well. If you look through social media,
that's for sure.
Yeah, not although, UMNO,
but I think within the urban liberal crowd, yeah, he got plenty of points there, right? Mm. No, but okay, but we are not politicians, so perhaps to make it on a more relatable note, right? So using that phrase, Joyce, that you mentioned there, no individual is bigger than the party, you know, we could spin it and say, no,
that's from the UMNO Secretary General,
right? So, you know, perhaps no individual is bigger than the company. Doesn't the same principle apply as well, you know? Mm-hmm. So how much do we have to, not to say kowtow, but be subservient to the broader narrative, the broader agenda, as opposed to, you know, say, you stand up for your convictions, you do what's right, and then, you know, hopefully, you know, propel your brand or get yourself forward there.
He's playing poker, isn't he? That's what he's doing. He's putting a huge roll of the dice. He's rolled both dice, right? He's hoping for double six. I'm not sure exactly how the UMNO loyalists will perform.
This.
Yeah, we'll take this because I'm watching the Free Malaysia Today video right now. It's quite uncanny. Everybody just walked in and he just sat there, you know, two elbows on his desk, just looking around, quite amused, I think, is his expression, that everybody's just left him behind.
Yeah.
And he's aware that the cameras are taking pictures of him. He's fully aware of the situation.
Right.
He's fully aware of the gravity of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And have you guys seen the memes that have come out?
Yeah.
Oh, my word. Like, talk about, you know, fascinating entertainment right there. I was just scrolling through non-stop, you know. I made one for the BFM Morning Run team as well, but that apparently didn't fly so well because you guys are just a tough lot to deal with. Did you guys not see my meme? Yeah,
no, we did. That was quite funny.
Well, no feedback whatsoever.
I did. I gave 2 thumbs up.
Oh, whatever. Okay, well, that's for internal consumption only. Inside joke there, sorry. But yeah, you know, the memes, I guess, okay, political points aside, it certainly was, yielded plenty of entertainment points, judging by the memes that came out.
So how do you read this? Because when UMNO Supreme Council meeting took place, right, the voting, right, Dato Sri Zahid Hamidi obviously won the race, but it wasn't that far behind.
It was a three-way kind of.
Correct.
Yeah.
Of course, Kuli was way behind. Right. So KJ had quite a lot of momentum behind him. I think he's taking some heart from that, and I think In some ways, of course, I give him the respect because he has stood by his conviction, saying that UMNO's got to change. And he said the fact that 15 years' time, if UMNO don't change, that's it, right? I mean, even in banking circles, the bankers are talking about how UMNO is basically dead in the water within a few weeks if they don't change.
Right. Yeah, KJ also had, I mean, he's been quite vocal. He's gone on social media and all that. He's also lamented on how, you know, taking the middle path was something that the grassroots could not understand. But, you know, it's something that he's been quite vocal and saying that, you know, there has to be a change somewhere. They have to, and he has acknowledged that.
Right. But the note of caution is that change can go either way, though. Change, correct, not perhaps not according to the mold that urban liberals want, but it could go right wing, you know, very fast, very quickly, and perhaps to the detriment of a centrist Malaysia.
Can I just quickly say, when KJ burst onto the scene as this wide-eyed Oxbridge graduate in the early 2000s, I thought he was the future of Malaysia, right? He was urbane, he was well-spoken, he was very smart. And, you know, he's obviously easy in the eye, right, in terms of where the aesthetics go and the cameras and social media, right? Right. I thought he was really the future of Malaysia. And then he went into the whole Chris-waving thing, and I was like, But I think he's come back. He's come full circle.
All right. But whether or not the grassroots can accept that as well.
All right. Well, we're going to move on. We've got the 7 a.m. news bulletin coming up in a few minutes. But first, here's 3 Miles High by Travis here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.